when you go down from Jerusalem to Jericho, the modern highway follows a much shallower valley that leads more gently down the few hundred meters that take you from the top of Jerusalem down below sea level where Jericho is located. But the old days, you wouldn't have gone that way. You would have followed the way that's more accessible by foot. And when you go there today, you go down into the monastery of St. George, which was built in part to protect pilgrims who would be making their way along this trip, because it's a dangerous road. In fact, the guide who led us told us that this most likely is the place that gave the name that we have in Psalm 23, the Valley of the Shadow of Death, which is an awful kind of name of a place. But when you're there, you can see why it might be given that name. It's this really sheer and steep cliff faces that are there, stark and barren like so much of the Judean desert. And as you make your way, there's these hidden ridges that you have to walk around. And as you're going along these goat tracks, it's very narrow and you can't see further around. And so you know that there could be someone just lying in wait just around the corner. And so this sense of being really exposed and vulnerable. On the other side of the cliff, there are lots of rocky outcrops where people could also hide, you know, to spring out or to throw rocks or whatever at you. And so that sense of wanting to be able to see, to be led by the way of the Lord into a place of safety, gives new meaning to that psalm and to that desire to go to a place where the Lord would refresh and provide the sight of all that we might behold. And we're invited into that journey today. These three Gospels, last week, this week, and next week, from the Gospel of John, where we get almost the whole chapter read in each instance. Except tonight was hot, so I did the shorter version, which I don't normally do, but anyway. Tonight, we're invited into this encounter with the seeing of God. The man who is healed tonight, the healing itself seems almost like an afterthought. It's there at the beginning of the reading, but out of the 41 verses that make up this ninth chapter of John, the healing itself only takes two. And it's this really bizarre and strange detail that Jesus spits on the ground. You know, we generally discourage people to spit on the ground, and yet Jesus himself is doing it. And we're meant to be disciples of Jesus, so we probably should all leave the church today and spit on the ground and make a paste and rub it on each other's eyes as a sign of being faithful to the gospel. But he does this, of course, reminding us of Genesis 2 and the story of the creation of the man from the dust, from the dirt, from the clay, that's all we are. As Jesus creates and shapes and forms us and then breathes his life into him. And then he's told to go and to wash in the pool of Siloam, which we're told means sent. Because that's what, again, we're all about. We're meant to see in order that we can go. We're meant to be changed and transformed by God's love in order that we can go and share that with others and share that life and that goodness with others. Because this is framed as a story around, well, how are we in relation to God? The question that the disciples put to Jesus is one that we know well. Well, Master, this person is blind from birth. So who sinned? Was it he at some point in his history? Or was it his parents who sinned that something bad has happened? I mean, how much does that thinking still kind of capture us? We so often kind of imagine that something bad has happened, so I must have done something bad. You know, that whole kind of philosophy. And Jesus just shuts that way of thinking completely down. Neither he nor his parents sinned. No, this is simply done to give glory to God, as an opportunity for us to reflect upon how we might worship the Lord, how we might say yes more completely and more wholeheartedly to the ways of God. That's it. That's the sum total of what this is about. And then this man himself is led through this slow process of his eyes physically being opened, and then the eyes of his heart, the eyes of his mind, the eyes of his soul being opened to who is this person, as he begins to explore this with the Pharisees as they're hurling abuse at him, as they're hurling questions, as they're being obstinate fools in the face of this mighty work that he's done in their presence. And this man slowly begins to realize that this is no ordinary man who's done this. This is a prophet. This is a mighty man. This is a man who cannot be a sinner, who cannot be anything against the ways of God. And then at the end, when he has this conversation with Jesus, and this question is put to him, then I think this is really the question of the gospel tonight. Do you believe in the Son of Man? Well, the man says to Jesus, "Who is he, sir, that I may worship him?" And Jesus, of course, is able to say, "The one you are looking at, I am the one. I am the Son of Man." And in an instant, that's all it's taken. The man throws himself down. He kneels down on the dirt to worship Jesus. What will it take us to bow down to worship in the same way? That's the invitation that we have. The question that we get at the longer version of the gospel tonight that the Pharisees have. They're saying, "Surely we're not blind, Master." And he said, "Well, if you say that you're blind, you have the possibility of having your eyes open. But if you say you can see, then, and you refuse to admit that there's any possibility that you can't see, then that's where blindness remains." The invitation is to recognize that there are areas of blindness in our hearts, in our lives. We're invited to be followers of Jesus, to worship him, to serve him, to love him, to share that love with others. But so often there are these areas of blindness in our lives. Let's acknowledge that maybe, yes, there are things I don't know, things I haven't yet responded to, parts of my life that I need the grace and the mercy of God to do more work on, to rub off those hard edges of my heart. And in that moment, I can allow the worship of God to be the one gift that I can hold on to as we serve him, as we continue to surrender to God today.